up, everybody? Welcome back into the Sorry to Interrupt podcast. Tom, it's just you and me tonight, baby. It's a Monday rundown on a Tuesday. I hope everybody's enjoyed all the college basketball content we've been pumping out. We got plenty more coming. But Tom, we're going back to the basics tonight. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. Yeah, Monday rundown on a Tuesday, but not because we missed it. We just are giving you guys extra pods now. So, yeah, we got a Monday rundown on a Tuesday. We got a lot of golf to talk about. We're playing the hits today. What I love to talk about, really. And that's just Scottie Scheffler just becoming... Listen, I'm going to go out and say it. You were going to ask me it anyways. I'll say it right off the top. Best golfer I've ever seen since Tiger Woods. Prime Tiger.
Yeah, you know... We've had so many conversations about is the fact that Rahm's not there part of it? But, you know, Rahm was fully entrenched in the PGA Tour when Scotty went on his magical 2022 run. And now that he's putting, I mean, obviously he had the 16 for 16 inside of 15 on the final round of the Arnold Palmer.
He's putting at least average, if not a little bit above every round.
And dude, that's the thing. Like, he's just good at putting now. He's not exemplary. He's not phenomenal. But he's really just getting back to where he was a couple years ago. Combine that with the ball striking where he's better than everybody else. Combine that with the pitching and the wedging that he's better than everybody else. He is just on a run right now that, yeah, you're right. I mean, listen, this is his second consecutive win in as many weeks. This is he's the first player ever in the 57 years of the Players' Championship to repeat in back-to-back years. He is on a run right now, dude, where it's not hyperbolic. He is on a run that is as close to prime Tiger as we've seen.
Yeah, the only thing is to put in perspective – he's been playing exemplary golf for about, to be friendly, 2 years. Tiger did it for like 10, maybe 12. So, but that's not taking anything away from Scotty. I just wanted to give Tiger his all due respect there. But yeah, he's playing incredible golf. It's unbelievable. I don't care that Rahm's not there. I don't care that any of these guys aren't there. I still think you got to go out. You got to win those tournaments. And I mean, he just, after the first nine, he just went into full, like, have you ever seen The Wire?
You know, of course not, because it's a great show and I haven't seen
it. Well, he's like full Omar mode, where when he comes out with his shotgun, everybody's sprinting away and going to hide in their house because they're about to get jacked. I mean, and by the way, this tournament, after we're done waxing poetic about Scotty, I want to give a lot of kudos out to a lot of people running this tournament, too.
It was great all around. In a weekend that had the College Basketball Conference Championships and a lot of craziness there that we've articulated plenty
done talking
in the last
about
couple
that.
Days, I have watched plenty of this tournament because I couldn't take my eyes off of what Schauffele was doing for a while, off of Harmon, off of Wyndham, and then obviously Scotty. And how amazing is it that he was so mentally tough, bro, and physically tough to be fending off that neck injury where he could hardly rotate, and he said it was agonizing during his swing. It's so impressive what he's doing right now.
I mean, not only that, but I mean, the golf swing is so precise that even a slight movement with twitch or whatever when you're hurt, the fact that he not only played to that level, but went out and fucking just murdered a bunch of healthy guys, seemingly. I don't know what their injuries were, but Scotty's was well advertised. I mean, it's incredible. It really is.
He's just so dialed in right now, and he's making a situation that has been not ideal all year, you know, tournaments won by...
He made us forget for at least a week.
The mules, as the you guys say. And just in the whole state of the PIF, and now you've got the full swing that's been out. We'll talk about episode 3 tomorrow.
We also got to talk about the PIF, too, today.
Yeah.
A little meeting in the Bahamas.
They were. So just everything involved in the stink of pro golf... And Scotty is just making it appointment television. And to that note, I know you're probably going to say it too, so I'll speak for myself. NBC did an unbelievable job making this feel like this was the fifth major, even though it's obviously not.
If they could make every elevated event feel like this, golf, I would put watching golf with football Sundays, honestly.
It was that good. And CBS is up their game. And NBC finally was along for the party.
Yeah, the lighter, much lighter commercial load, all the cameras all over the place, the million broadcasts, the guy, I forgot his name, breaking down Rory, chucking the ball into the grass and whatnot, like that was, and throwing it as hard as he could too, which was an awesome clip to see. The coverage was just amazing. It really was. And honestly, for Scotty, the whole thing I was thinking was, you know, of course we have two decades plus worth of amazing moments from Tiger that we all watch. But if you watch Tiger on a week-to-week basis, it was bomb it down the middle of the fairway, hit a perfect iron, and putt. It was boring golf, and that's what Scotty's doing. Like, Scotty wasn't the most fun player to watch, but we're watching greatness now at this point, and he's making boring fun again.
And you know what, too, is he is starting to have that level of intimidation where you see
players. Is it the beard?
Like, when he, it might be. I actually really like the beard.
Props looks good.
To him. When he's attacking back nine on Sunday, you start to feel the pressure amp up from everybody else because they know he's only just beginning and this is winning time. And that's what he's been doing for the last several years, particularly now the last 2 weeks.
Absolutely, man. It was an incredible tournament. And, you know, last week I think I asked you, is Scotty going to win the Grand Slam? Now the question is Scotty ever going to lose again?
If he continues to play like this and putt like this, it's hard. I mean, he's number one in almost every single metric.
Oh, and it's like by a million miles, too, outside of putting. And putting, he's climbing up, too.
Yeah, it's sick when you look at the analytics and you look at the rankings and these metrics of how much he's just kicking the shit out of very good competition.
Yeah, it really is incredible. And that injury as well, because, I mean, you know, you've seen Scotty swing. The amount of movement that he has and how precise it is, the injury thing is very underrated. The fact that he fought through it and came back, too. I mean, he was, what, 6 or 7 shots back of the lead and went out and grabbed it.
That's what he does, man. I mean, Rom is capable of doing that too.
Rom and Spurts.
Know who else is.
I don't know if he's going to be as. I don't know if we've ever gotten a run like this out of Rom. But yeah, I think Rom and Scotty are the only guys where, you know, truly, if they're within like 10 shots going into Sunday on any tournament, you don't count them out.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are the two that come to mind right now.
Let's work the leaderboard a bit. Xander, it was kind of a tough scene. Just a little bit of choking on your spit there. All accounts are that he was wearing a 5 o'clock hitter's jacket when he was leaving the parking lot.
It's hard, man. I mean, he missed that putt on, what was it, 17? He played such a good round and such a great weekend of golf.
But when it was when it was nut up time, I mean, I saw a couple waywards.
I was just going to say, I never thought he was going to win when Scotty was making his charge. I didn't.
And then working a little further, I agree with you, working a little further down. I mean, before we talk about Clark, Harmon is just awesome to watch. They said it on NLU when the guy's driving the ball 40 freaking yards behind Scotty and the rest of the pack, but he's just going at every pin and he's just such a nails putter. And that final putt on 18, like he was convinced that was going in.
He read it perfectly. He just came up a little bit short.
We got to talk about Wyndham, huh?
Oh, God. You want to have like a pit in your stomach type moment. Wow.
You know, and they pointed it out on the NLU podcast as well. I'm not a big fan of his caddy going up with the wedge and almost fucking knocking the thing in every time. But, but I mean, that putt just breaks my heart. I wish they had a camera in the bottom of the cup because I swear it hit the bottom and bounced out.
It looked that way. I've never seen a putt do that.
No, I mean, every once in a while you get a hard lip out, but I also like...
He did like a 270, dude.
Yeah, and not to mention, I mean, you might get a hard lip out or something on a Westchester County course that's got 10 million rounds a week running through it, and the grounds and the green is beat to shit, but you don't see a hard lip like that on a PGA Tour course where the holes are manicured perfectly and whatnot. I want to say it was a perfect putt, but it didn't go in. It was a damn near perfect putt. Every rotation but one was perfect.
Yeah, it's basically the exact one of like in basketball where the ball is three quarters of the way down and it somehow just doesn't go through the net. That's how this felt.
I don't know how to feel about it because you said you watched a lot of it, and if you watched like holes, off the top of my head, like 8 through 12, maybe 13, he kind of gave this one away, and then he decided to come back and birdie 16 and 17 and have a putt to tie it. So, and not to mention he's got a major, so I don't really know how to feel about it. Sometimes he sprays it, but I mean, I can't call him a choke artist for the way he came back, and that putt just breaks my heart for the guy.
Also has just been playing way too good of golf to put him in that category.
No, I mean, the guy's got a major, and like you said, he's been probably, I'd say, the second best and most consistent golfer on the planet, excluding the other tour, since, I don't know, Harmon won last year.
Yeah, I mean, you feel, at least I feel, probably as confident in him in big moments of big tournaments as I do anybody else right now. Like, right now, I feel better
about anybody Wyndham else? Than
Wyndham than Rory. I feel better of about course. Wyndham than Rory right now.
But let's we just wax poetic about him for 10 minutes. We got to put Scotty.
I said besides Scotty.
Okay, well then, yes, I agree with you.
You didn't let me finish my point. Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Besides Scotty, he's about as good as anybody. And that making that charge, I think that his game is very catered to it. Yeah, I don't love all of this stuff. He does take a long time too, which obviously the president of the 5 o'clock hitters club, Patrick Cantlay, nobody quite matches him. But watching Clark since last June at LACC, I feel probably as strong about his game as anybody not named Scottie Scheffler.
I agree with you. I wouldn't be surprised if he knocks off another one this year, although Scotty's going to win all four.
Hits the shit out of the ball, too.
Bombs it, but every once in a while, the cut turns in. Actually, it really doesn't, but it should turn into a little bit of a slice. I know all about that, and so does our boy Willie. Matty Fitzpatrick, second or first, I don't know, in the field in driving. Got that weight taken out of his driver, and now he just looks like a different player, like a couple years ago at Brookline, Matt Fitz again.
Yeah, finishes 16 under, had a really consistently good weekend, not up there with the top of the leaderboard, but a guy that, I don't know, Tom, are you feeling better about him as we get ready to charge into Augusta?
I'm feeling better about him for the other majors. I don't know if his cross-handed chipping makes me nervous, but he is pretty good with it.
Hideki up there at minus 15.
Hideki, that's Will and your guy. Ludvig's there. You know how I feel about him. He played great. Tron said it on the NLU. He putted like shit, but he struck the ball amazing. Sahith, he had some waywards, but I think he led the field in putting, so he looked good. Your boy, Joel Damon.
On a shitty Thursday and then was awesome Friday, Saturday.
Could have won the damn tournament. Was excellent. Again, you mentioned Rory, just like, I think he had a round in the low 60s this week, but it's not going to get me excited. I'm at the point now where it's like, you just, any of these big tournaments, whether it be the Players or any of this, like, I'm going to miss it and I'm going to be happy when it happens, but I am going to miss it.
He shot a 65 on Thursday. That was his best for the week. Yeah, finishes at 9 under, T19. He's just playing very good golf, and that's it. I mean, he's not putting himself in the discussion to win any of these, but you look up at his scores and they're always good. That's just not championship level golf.
Yeah, maybe he needs to look into a Ricky Fowler coaching change. I don't know, but Roy's just not the killer he was of old.
And that's the biggest thing, like watching Full Swing and recapping some of what happened last year. The killer instinct does not appear to be there. Shit, you can go all the way back to 2022 at the Open Championship. Easily should have won that tournament. Easily.
Absolutely. A couple complaints down the board. Tommy Fleetwood, just got to be, you're a better ball striker than that. Our boy Max, of course, somewhere. Yeah, 64th. Ricky, far down the list. Anybody that got cut, that, you know, JT getting cut, that's a tough scene.
JT's the one that's out to me.
Spieth getting cut, too.
Is it okay if I'm done with Spieth?
Oh, wow.
I'm done considering him as somebody who's going to rise up and win some of these big tournaments, including majors. I'm not buying what he's selling at all.
Okay. I mean, Spieth is one of those guys where he could look like dog shit for 3 weeks straight and then come out and you know, beat the shit out of everybody for 4 straight days. So I'm never ready to get off of him. I love the ride, but, you know, I understand it. Willie Z missing the cut, I was disappointed in that as well. That's pretty much all I got.
The week before.
Yep. I'm glad I didn't. I don't think I picked him this week, and I'm glad I didn't.
What'd you think of the course?
I think I tweeted this out. It's such a hard course to play, and that's why Scotty won, because he's just playing damn near perfect golf. And it's, for me, it's like, if I played that course, I don't even know if I'd be able to enjoy it. I'd just be so scared.
Yeah, the rough is wild.
The rough, not to mention, it's just like every time, you know, you're like, oh, this looks like a good spot. Just kidding, there's water. Oh, there's a million bunkers. And then right next to it, that's what, what's his name? Pete Dye is known for, I believe. He made this course, right, I think? Is where, you know, where the most danger is, usually right next to that is usually the best spot to hit the ball. Which messes with your head. But I mean, when you're as precise as Scotty, he made that place look like a fucking pitching putt, especially on Sunday.
He does that to a lot of places right now.
Yes, it was made by Pete and Alice Dye. Alice is apparently just a diabolical green shaper. R.I.P., of course.
Well, naturally. Okay, you want to recap some picks and talk about the Valspar?
Do we have to recap picks? I guess we do. You gave it to me this week. You had some good picks, and then Max, which was your only pick outside of the top 20, so awesome week for you. Scotty, you obviously had finishing first, as did I, so those points kind of cancel each other out. You had Sahith on there and Rory as well. You finished at 23.5. I had Wyndham on there and Scotty, so I had a 1 and 2, so it really took a good week for you to beat me, but I also had Minwoo, who was disappointing, and Ricky, as we mentioned earlier. So I finished at 31st place, so that puts the totals, including the 2 points for the wins for each of us, and then you getting a point at 6-5, Sean. So you made up, you're making up the ground now.
Damn straight. Yeah, I've been feeling pretty decent, so we'll see if I can carry that into this week.
Well, with that being said, Sean, you won. Go ahead and give me your foursome. You don't have to give it to me slow, because I just listen back now and type it up, so you can rattle them off.
Good to know.
And I'm not writing it by hand anymore, because I realized after 5 years of doing this that I should probably not do that.
And if you can't read your own handwriting, that makes it even worse.
Never good.
Without further ado, I'll take the tee box here. I got Nick Taylor in my foursome for this week. I'm going back to the well. I'm going back to Xander just because of what he did this week. He's somebody who I feel really good about his golf game. And I think he's going to shake off the disappointment and go back to just playing a really good 4 days. I got Sam Burns in this one. I think he won this tournament a couple years ago. And then my winner is Mr. Brian Harman. So close at the TPC. I think he's going to get right back at it and kick some ass this week and take the championship.
Well, for me and you, we're basically going to have two players playing each other, because I got Joel Damon, I got Xander, I got Keegan, who I like this week. He's 5-for-7 in making cuts, not including this past week, but he's been playing some pretty decent golf, and then I got Sam Burns winning it.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, so we're going a little chalky.
Sam Burns
but
to play very well, but not win it.
There, yeah, listen, if he can finish number two for you, that's golden. I mean, this week, you know, it, coming off that tournament I said earlier, it's going to be a bit of a letdown. So we got to – I mean, neither of you nor I have any real mules in there. I'm taking – I would never call Joel Damon a mule, so I think he could win this thing.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Nick Taylor up on the leaderboard on Sunday.
No, not at all. Not at all. So we made the most of this week. Probably won't enjoy it as much as this past week, but I'm still going to try and watch the golf and enjoy it. With tucked in there with a lot of basketball.
Yeah, I'm going to be brutally honest with you. It's going to be super hard for me to be watching much of this. I'll keep up with it, but when we get on the pod Monday, Tuesday, whenever we do our rundown next week, I will be lying to you if I said I have a lot. I watched a lot of this tournament because it's just not going to happen. And by the way, good job of the calendar and the PGA Tour of making sure TPC was this past weekend as opposed to this one. Because even though the conference tournaments are fun, there's some games that you don't really care that much about. And that tournament is going to probably dominate a lot of casual viewers. It would not do that this coming weekend.
Yep. No, no doubt about it. I'm going to have it on the little Kindle that I have while I'm watching the main screen probably, but I'll be keeping an eye on it.
There you go. We'll at least be able to talk about it next week.
Of course.
Want to talk about a little NBA, Tom. We've been talking so much college basketball that we got to talk some NBA.
Real quick, though, thoughts on the Yasser meeting with Tiger and the rest of the tour?
Oh, yeah. We wanted to talk about that. I'm not as well-versed in it. You probably are, so you have the floor.
So apparently it's been reported across the board that the day after the players, Yasser and Tiger, I don't know who else he met with, but I know it was Tiger, played golf in the Bahamas. So Sean, your prediction for possibly this whole thing, actually maybe us getting some information that is tangible being done before the Masters. So again, Sean, I mean, you might be coming up roses.
I'm so over this fucking thing. I just want too. It to happen, and I just want to have it over with so we can get the best players playing together again. That's all I care about.
Yep, I think that's a consensus point of view now. I'm right there with you. It's just, let's get something done. Enough with the Saudi crap, enough with everything. Let's just get it done. You know, if we're going to be taking the money, just take the money.
I just want it to be done with. I want all of the anguish and all of the speculation to be wiped away and to just have everybody playing together again and having whatever version of this merger is settled. And hey, if the cat is playing, then that, obviously a meeting with the cat is exactly what you need because he is – you don't – need to put fucking Jay Monahan out there.
Listen,
at all. Tiger Woods. He's
first of all, Jay's presser. I tweeted it out the day I watched. It was an absolute joke. I only got about 2 minutes into it before I threw up. But yeah, I mean, now it's like, okay, you finally Yasser came and he kissed the ring. Now let's get things moving. The ring has been kissed.
The dirty work's been done for Jay, and now just please do your fucking job and get this done.
Thank you. All right, let's talk a little NBA here. You want to talk some top plays? I'd like to add a third to this, by the way. I think Jalen Johnson's dunk, jumping basically over a human being, Vince Carter style in the Olympics, was pretty sweet.
Well, Anthony Edwards' dunk over a human being, that being John Collins, exited him out of the game because it gave John Collins a concussion. So
let me tell you something, Sean.
I don't know if we've had that before, dude.
This is a beautiful segue. Scottie Scheffler, like I said, he's playing boring golf, a lot like someone we know. I've been saying it for a month now. This is my guy, and he looks like somebody. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, it was very interesting in a week that you have now your new guy. The torch has been passed from your old favorite player to your new favorite. The old still reminded us of one of the greatest individual performers on a basketball court we've ever seen. Just going back to the Anthony Edwards dunk, he's done a couple things in a couple weeks. Obviously, that game-winning block he had. But this dunk on John Collins is just it's embarrassing to happen, but for Collins to have to leave the game with a concussion because you got dunked on in the head is just got to be the worst way once he comes to realize, oh shit, everybody's using the moment I got concussed as a poster.
Yeah, that's just terrible for him. I mean, that was such a body right there. He took off from basically the free throw line like it was nothing.
He is must-watch TV. He's so fucking good.
I'm going to stand on. I'm going to die on the hill, bro. Too. He looks like somebody, and he's a dog.
I know. He has everything. Now he just needs to start winning.
And he's only 22.
If he could bring his team along for a ride, though, dude, oh, my God. This spring, we could be talking about the ascension of Anthony Edwards into a pantheon of those who we may not name right now.
We're not going to name it. We're not going to say the quarterback for the Jets. We're not going to say his name, and we're not going to compare Scotty to the other guy.
No, we're not.
So for the record, I didn't compare Scotty to Tiger, although I'm doing it very subtly. I said he's the most talented player since Tiger at the beginning of the pod.
And he's doing things that Tiger actually did.
Boring golf.
Anthony Edwards has accomplished things that other guys have, but
not yet.
You of him,
but he's 22.
How about that game winner that Kyrie had? And these are the moments where I really fucking miss him, as my team is probably the most boring team in the NBA right now. Not really close, because they don't even have a young player you're really excited about that does fun things. Kyrie Irving made a game-winning shot over Jokic, left-handed skyhook from the free throw line.
Water, too.
One of the most incredible shots I've ever fucking seen.
Yeah, and it wasn't like a desperation. Like, it was just poetry in motion. I mean, Kyrie's an artist, man. He's wacky like an artist. He's really a basketball artist, I think, more than any other player we've seen before. I've never questioned the talent at all. He's incredible. And I think he's back on. Like, the Mavs are playing pretty well right now. I think, in my opinion, this is the best situation Kyrie's been in since the Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, what did he do well on the Cleveland Cavaliers? He played with LeBron, a heliocentric player, and he's kind of like a cat. Like, he comes and goes as he wants to. I mean, one second he's going to be awesome. The next second you might not remember him. It's kind of the same thing with Luka. It's perfect.
Man, you couldn't have said that better. I mean, he's missed his 15, 16 games that you pretty much can dock him for every year. But you're right. When he is engaged and he is playing and he's not hurt, he does a couple things. Now, granted, that Maverick team is not going to play enough defense, in my opinion, to fend off some other teams, and if they make it into the playoffs, they're not going to go very far. But my God, those two guys, their offensive explosiveness can beat anybody. I mean, they beat a Denver Nugget team that never loses of late and has been playing unbelievable basketball in the fourth quarter. And Kyrie shot that over Jokic, which is just almost insane to do. And you're right, bro. Like, this is the best situation for him since Cleveland. He's really not trying to be the guy. He's not doing practices behind his coach's back. He's not trying to be the captain of the team. He's just going out and playing basketball. And it really is the best case scenario for him.
No doubt about it. But just to give you a little perspective, it took like the greatest game winner of all time to beat the Nuggets. They have to go and try and beat the Nuggets four times in a 7-game series.
Yeah, and it's gonna be a mountain of a task to do that. But for Dallas, listen, again,
the Gafford trade was incredible.
Gafford has been awesome, but PJ Washington hasn't. I missed on that one. I thought that was gonna be a huge pickup. He's really not provided the scoring or the 3-point shooting I thought he was going to.
No, he hasn't really found his fit. And you know what? Especially when LaMelo was out in New Orleans, it didn't really seem like they had a true point guard there, so everybody kind of played with the ball, whereas maybe he's having a hard time adjusting to Luka and then Kyrie having the ball in their hands every second.
Well, you see it. I mean, even Hardaway has been shooting terribly for the last 6-7 weeks, and I think it's hard for him as a guy who is a heat check guy – to know that you might make three straight threes, but there's no guarantee you're getting the ball in the fourth straight possession. And I think that's hard for certain players. I mean, I think you saw it with Brunson. That's why I can't believe they let him get away and sign possibly the greatest free agent contract in recent memory with the Knicks, because you have to be a very special and unique player to play with Luka. And obviously Kyrie came in later after a half a season after Jaylen was gone, but it's hard to play with him, and it's hard to play in that style of that ball dominant offense. But hey, listen, it doesn't fit everybody, and PJ Washington, I think, was able to freelance a lot more in Charlotte than we thought.
Yeah, and he was also playing on a team that never won and we never watched, so it could be a good stats, bad team kind of guy. But I do like seeing what the Mavs are doing, even if they missed on that. The road still goes through Denver, though, of course.
Yeah, I'm still going. There's nobody who's beaten them four times in seven games in the West.
Not at all.
Not a chance. Tom, let's talk about your Knicks. They've won four in a row. They had a couple of really impressive wins, but they're also playing some of the best defense that we've seen in, honestly, a decade, and that's not being hyperbolic. They're holding great offensive teams to like 80 points. They held the Sacramento Kings to 91 in Sacramento, which is almost impossible to do. Jalen Brunson's on another fucking heater. You got OG back. Now he's back out. But Hartenstein's been great. This McBride. Team is rolling again, man. I think they're back.
McBride fucking locked up Curry last night. Like, there's no way else to say it. It's just forcing the ball out of his hands, contesting every shot. He was just amazing. And they are the best defense in the league. And since these rules have been changed, which I don't know if we've mentioned on the pod or not, we've done so many, I can't remember, but we're going to mention it now. I mean, like I said to you yesterday, is there anybody happier about these rule changes than Tibbs? It's just this team, this is their kind of basketball. I don't think there's happier players or a coach on the planet than this team right now that these adjustments were made. And now, if you can get Randall back and get him somewhat healthy, I think with these new rules and whatnot, the Knicks might have a bit of a shot.
I've always said if they are fully healthy and they have this iteration of the roster, they will give Boston the hardest time of any of the other teams. I don't like Milwaukee's defense. I don't like their lack of depth. There's nobody deeper than the Knicks when fully healthy. Obviously, that's a huge caveat. You look at the minutes these guys are playing too, and I know the narrative is, oh, Tibbs runs these guys into the ground. Well, for several weeks, he was basically playing with six players. But last night, McBride played 47 minutes, and Hart played 48.
Yeah. But you know what? When we get all our guys back, I love the fact that Tibbs is going to be able to trust some of these guys more.
You also have to win these games. Mm-hmm. So he's doing it out of simple desperation, honestly.
Absolutely. With the way the standings are looking, the Knicks, then we can't afford to lose anything. I mean, the Magic we're a half game up on the Magic. Like, they're nipping at our heels. So they need to win every game they can.
Yeah, you cannot afford a drop to the play-in. You just can't.
Nope. Cannot fumble the bag on this one. I don't think you will. No, I don't think so either. I'm pretty confident about it. All right, let's talk Pelicans real quick.
We talked them a little bit last week. They continue to roll. They are once again fully healthy, and Zion, as point Zion, unlocks a whole nother level for this team. They had a great win over the weekend where McCollum was dog shit in the fourth quarter. And Zion put him on his back, orchestrating the offense. Trey Murphy hit a couple big threes. You also got some great contribution from Herb Jones. And I think this team right now is clicking on all cylinders. I think they're locked into the five, bro. I don't see them falling out. At least they're not going to fall out of six. But I think they're locked up at five. And shit, maybe they can make a run at four.
I completely agree with you. Obviously, you don't even have to say it, but I will, barring health, given Zion and whatnot. But, I mean, he's been stepping up in all facets of the game. I'm just looking at his numbers since the beginning of March, and he's gone from, you know, at the end of February, 5 rebounds, 3 rebounds, 3 rebounds, and then March starts, and he jumps up 8, 12, 6, 9, 7, 10, 7. He's really starting to rebound a little bit more. He's just filling the stat sheet. It's not just the points. Like, he's got more blocks. It's just he seems way more engaged for whatever reason, and I love seeing it out of the guy finally.
If you believe the report that Brian Windhorst mentioned on his podcast, The Hoop Collective, on Monday – that he has lost 25 pounds since the play-in tournament, where obviously they were just embarrassed and he looked disgusting. Then finally, it is. But you know what? He did. And on a big stage, he got shit on and torn apart left and right. And hey, sometimes we got to fall all the way down to rock bottom to finally climb back up. Maybe that was his rock bottom, because his injuries, him being lethargic, those have all contributed to how much can we trust this Pelican team. Well, if he's in this great shape and he's taking everything seriously and he's finally fucking rebounding, which he just never has done. It's amazing a guy of that stature just was a 3.5 rebound a guy. It's really criminal when you think about it. So this team is clicking on all cylinders. Could they possibly make a run at the Western Conference Final? I think so. They're one of the hottest teams right now, and it's not really a fluke. They just have to fully have their full cast of characters.
It's never been a fluke, really, since they went on that run at the beginning of what was it, last season. I've always believed that they were healthy, they'd be a solid team. And yeah, I mean, they are one of the candidates to lose to the Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference Final. I put them and Minnesota up there right now.
The West, this playoffs in the Western Conference, bro, is going to just be amazing. I cannot wait for the matchups. I mean
with all the game sevens, we might be playing playoff basketball till October, till the next season starts.
I mean, you got OKC, you got Minnesota, who will eventually get Towns back. You've obviously got Denver. You've got this New Orleans team. I mean, Sacramento. Obviously, I mean, whatever happens in the play-in with the Lakers and the Warriors, if they get in, it's just great from top to bottom.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Let's talk about a team that hasn't been great, though, real quick in the Western Conference. That's Phoenix. I don't even remember who I picked at the beginning of the year, but I definitely had the Suns playing a lot better than this. And for me, it's just like there's not enough basketballs to go around, and it's just disappointing. I mean, Booker needs to be a better distributor. Beal just needs to be better in general. And KD, he's putting up the numbers, but they just feel empty.
Well, you notice the two teams I didn't mention when I ran down that Western Conference. I intentionally didn't mention Phoenix, and I intentionally didn't mention the Clippers, because both have been scuffling of late. And with the Suns, listen, they lost a game the other day to Milwaukee, where Milwaukee made 27 of 42 threes. You're just not going to win games like that. But Kevin Durant in the fourth quarter of the last five games has been absolutely absent, reminding you a little bit of that 2022 playoff series with the Nets against Boston, where Boston swept them. Speaking of which, Boston got him again a couple nights or about a week ago in Boston. Jason Tatum has this guy's number, man. And you mentioned there's not enough basketballs. Maybe having a real point guard is important, because they have moments where they straight up don't know what they're doing offensively. You got Durant kind of hiding in the corner if he's not offensively involved. You got Booker hiding in the corner if he's not offensively involved. Beal's actually been putting up really good numbers offensively, but it doesn't really matter. Everybody else is kind of just standing around, and they're not going to get their consistent stops. And I'm tired of hearing about how much of a renaissance Nurkic has had. Talk to me in the playoffs. He's going to get abused.
He's definitely going to get abused. I agree with everything you're saying. I like Beal. I just need to see more of a point guard out of him, or Booker, one or the other. We just need to
start. But neither of them are point guards, and that's the thing.
I know, but at the beginning of both of their careers, they were able to distribute the ball much better than they are right now. I know they've developed into more scoring-type players, but yeah, I'm very disappointed in this team. They're also, the depth-wise, they are just shredded, so I don't see them going very far in the playoffs.
The tests that they've had, the real ones, I'm not talking about Laker games, I'm not talking about Warriors games, I'm talking about when they played Denver, although they did beat up on Denver pretty good like 2 weeks ago in Denver, which was surprising. They kind of shot the lights out in that game.
Yeah, but they hit everything. Boston, I watched that game. They were making everything. Yeah,
but Boston's taking it to them, and obviously that's a team that you try to measure yourself up with if you're talking about a title team, right? So I don't know, man. I think that they're going to have their stretches in five-game samples where they win 4 out of 5 and everything looks great. And then they're going to have ones where they just the defense isn't there, the playmaking isn't there, the offense isn't fluid, and before you know it, they're out. I would not be surprised if this is a first-round exit team.
Me either. And then we're going to be talking about KD all summer. It's that team talking about how, I mean, what are they going to do? It's
They have no flexibility to do anything, dude.
No, I mean, I don't, this is such recency bias, but I don't know if I could remember a team more handcuffed than this. Even those Lakers teams still had somewhat of an out.
Right, cuz you had the first round picks at least, and you had Westbrook's like expiring.
Exactly. They don't have shit.
No. Like, and seriously. And now this coming season, this summer, is when the second apron and the new tax comes into play.
I know. Their new owner is going to be writing a lot of big fat checks.
He really is. I mentioned the Clippers just to finish up with them. I don't think that they're a title team. Although,
when Kawhi left with back spasms and he actually went to the hospital a couple of weeks ago, I was like, "Yeah, that was a nice run you guys had there."
Yeah, again, you don't trust them to stay healthy for two straight months, right?
No, who in their right mind would? Between Paul George, I mean, yeah, of course, Harden's going to stay healthy. That's one thing the guy does, is actually playing the games. But between Paul George and fucking Kawhi, no way. Are you crazy?
Paul George has actually played almost every game this year.
So. He has, but he does have a tremendous injury history, so we'll see. I mean, he has. I'll give him the playoff woes. He has shaken that over recent years, but he can get hurt.
The other thing, too, is when you're looking at the athleticism and the youth of some of these other teams, like an Oklahoma City and a Minnesota.
I love OKC. I just would like to see another big man in there come playoff time.
Well, we've been clamoring for that. The fact they didn't address that at the trade deadline, even though I like the Hayward move, that it was inexplicable that their pickup was Mike Muscala on a buyout.
Gafford could have been had for – they wouldn't have even missed the assets that they had to give away.
They wouldn't even know the assets were gone.
I know, probably not even on their balance sheet. They're so low.
They're like, wait, we gave away these? I didn't even know we had these.
Yeah, and when at the draft, it'll say, you know, Dallas or Washington picks via OKC, and they'll be like, wait a minute, we gave them that? Oh, well, whatever. We would have to cut the guy anyways, so whatever.
Exactly. Their draft assets are like ashtray money.
For them, absolutely. All right, let's talk MLB real quick. Blake Snell, 2 years, $62 million. Scott Boras continues his historic run.
Of absolute ineptitude. What an awful offseason for his. Do you think any of these guys will fire him?
I mean, it only really takes one, and then I think the floodgates will open or the dominoes will fall, whatever you want to say. I just think, since probably 2020, I think the league and just the way contracts are signed and everything in the MLB is just passing by. And it's like, you need to adjust with the times, man. Coach K did. He went into the transfer portal. Like, you need to start adjusting with the fucking times, Boris, and either doing smaller, fatter deals or getting your guys signed earlier, like a lot of these smart teams are doing to get the money. You got to figure out different ways than just fucking holding their feet to the fire and saying, oh, somebody else will give them a deal. We'll match that.
I think his biggest issue is he compares his great, great historic clients to his other really good ones, and he tries to make them the same. Like, this coming off season, he's going to have Corbin Burns, Juan Soto. Like, he's going to be just fine, and he's going to have Snell back out on the market, Bellinger back out on the market, Chapman possibly back out on the market.
So you're calling an opt-out for Snell already?
Well, if he has a great year, absolutely. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's going to opt out and test it again.
Of course.
Because it makes sense. But this is the thing with Snell that you and I have talked about all winter long. He's an excellent pitcher for about 5 1/3 to 5 2/3 innings. And in the around his Cy Young years, 2019 and 2023, he's really not been a great pitcher. Now, the thing that he does is strike a lot of guys out. But he also walks a lot of guys, and that drives up pitch counts. And you can't really depend on him to give you a lot of length.
And the other
and
problem
if he's
with
not
the high
dialed pit, in
exactly the other that? the other problem with the high walk rates is there's always people on base. So if he's not dealing that day, he's coming out in the third then.
Yeah, he's had some years where his ERA is in the fours. And when you look at a two-time NL Cy, or two-time Cy Young winner, 1 year in the AL, 1 year in the NL, you got to read between the lines of what some of those other years were. And they're not exceptional. They're good, but he's volatile. He's a lot like Carlos Rodon, where when he's healthy and locked in, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball, and you could throw a ton of money at him. But in those other years, and he's hurt or he's inconsistent, that's not a guy you want to be paying $30 million to. And I guess Boris circled back to the Yankees and the Astros, and neither team was willing to extend over $30 million in the Giants up to $31 million. It's a really good pickup for the Giants, who have had a sneaky good offseason. They got the center fielder from Korea, who a lot of people liked back earlier in the winter. They traded for Robbie Ray. They bring in Matt Chapman. They signed Blake Snell. This has become a pretty interesting team, Tom. I'm interested to see when we do our baseball predictions next week of where we rank the Giants in the NL West.
Yeah, I think they're poised to shoot for one of those wild card spots. I mean, the Dodgers are going to win that division and then lose in the first round, but I think the Giants can definitely shoot out for one of those spots. What do you think about the Yankees rotation? Do you think that given the news where I guess Cole, they said he's going to be out for like 1 to 2 months, I'll believe it when I see it kind of thing for me. But do you think that the rotation is kind of chalk and they're going to build internally, or do you think there's still something to be done?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Trevor Bauer playing for that team, maybe strike out absolutely a lot of Yankees.
Yeah, he's pitching for, what is it, that Mexico team?
Obviously, he's not going to come because Gerrit Cole hates his guts, and I don't think the Yankees want to deal with all that shit.
The Yankees are not going to touch him, and neither is any other MLB team. I'm so sick and tired of hearing about Trevor Bauer. I mean, the Red Sox basically don't have a rotation. Jordan Montgomery's still not signed. Michael Lorenzen still isn't signed. There's no way Trevor Bauer's going back to the major leagues. The teams are not going to touch him.
You think the Yankees show any interest in Montgomery?
I think that ship has sailed. I think that he doesn't want to come back. I don't think they are going to give him the money. I think he's going to settle for kind of an Eduardo Rodriguez type deal, which I think is 4 years and $85 million is probably where he'll go. I still think Boston makes the most sense because they just don't have a rotation, but they seem to be super, super cheap and not wanting to pay anybody. So we'll see what ends up happening there. For the Yankees, I think they're going internally, dude. You hear a lot about Will Warren. You hear a lot about Chase Hampton. You hear a lot about Clayton Beter. Luis Gil is healthy again and absolutely shoving in spring training.
Yep.
They could go kind of a bullpen by committee if they want to do that with a bunch of long arm guys. I think that they're going to be fine for now. Their big acquisitions are going to come in July when they assess the state of the rotation. Sneakily, Carlos Rodon's had an excellent spring blowing the ball by guys, and his off speed looks good. Cortez seems to be healthy. Stroman's been good. So I think they're going to count on their internal options. Maybe Michael Lorenzen makes sense, but he's still going to cost a decent amount too. So what the Yankees offense this year is going to be so much better than it was last year, where it should at least carry them to the point of real contention come the trade deadline when certain options are much more readily available. I know we talked about Cease last week. I'm so glad they didn't give the prospect package that San Diego did.
No, I'm good on that. I don't think he's worth that. I wouldn't mind seeing Lorenzen if it's for the right price. He can be a pinch hitter too. Drops bombs.
There you go. What do you think?
No, I would like to see them go out and get a Montgomery or whatnot, but if he doesn't want to come back and the price is too high for the Yankees once Snell was gone. I was hoping that they just gave Snell out of desperation a mega 1 year deal, but it seemed like he wanted, even though he's got the opt out, it seems like he wanted longer than that. So I'm okay. I know the Yankees are going to go internally, and I've accepted that. Had Cole been ruled out for the season with Tommy John or whatever else injury that he would have to be out for the season, I would have been very disappointed had they not made a hasty decision, possibly an irrational one.
Yeah, and see that? I'm so glad you said that. You know, Yankee Twitter has become a cesspool where you have people calling Steinbrenner cheap now because he didn't go get Blake Snell. And I really just don't understand everybody's desire with like the big names. Like when George started going balls out to get certain pitchers, like he got a washed up Randy Johnson. Like he got, yeah, he got Mike Mussina and Roger Kevin Clemens. Brown. Those are great additions. But he also overpaid for Keiagawa. Like yep. They also got Carl Pavano.
Yep.
Like AJ Burnett had a couple great World Series games that led the Yankees to wins, but AJ Burnett didn't even make it through his Yankee contract because he was so inconsistent. So it's not like all these guys are great signings just because they're out there. And if this is what he had to settle for, I just want to clarify this too. Because the Yankees would be paying 110% of the luxury tax because of where their payroll is right now, which is $310 million, the 2 years, $62 million that Snell got actually would be 2 years, $97 million for the Yankees. So now you go ahead and tell Hal Steinbrenner how cheap he is. If he would have had to pay basically over $45 million this year for Blake Snell when you factor in the tax. So listen, there have been times where you and I have been frustrated. Like, why didn't they go get Manny Machado? They got DJ LeMahieu, and for 2 years, DJ LeMahieu was an MVP candidate. So they trust their pitching depth. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but this is a team that should score plenty of runs to win plenty of games, and they're going to have a lockdown bullpen. Just get me to July in contention and survey the market then. Seattle might be looking to offload salary if they're not good. There's going to be plenty of other teams. Maybe you can get a Devin Williams. I know he's a closer, but you get him from Milwaukee. There's going to be plenty of guys that take shape and available on bad teams.
Completely agree with you. I think we stand pat. We're happy with what we got. I'm excited to go into the regular season. I think the Yankees have a real shot.
I think they have a real shot too. I can't wait for our predictions next week and see where we stand.
And by the way, I think that Soto is going to have an incredible year, and the Yankees are going to have zero choice but to lock him up.
The Yankees' plan is to lock him up.
Of course.
The Yankees, and I know that,
like you said earlier, with when you were talking about what's his face, Scott Boras, like, he's a generational type player. Like the Yankees, I'm pretty confident they know the difference between that and another guy where it's like, he's good, you know, a couple time all-star, but we're not going to overpay.
Listen, when the Yankees really want a Gerrit Cole, they got Gerrit Cole, Scott Boras client. When the Yankees really want a Carlos Rodon, they got Carlos Rodon, Scott Boras client. They didn't really want Blake Snell. They wanted him, and honestly, Blake Snell should have taken that six-year 160 offer that they made to him prior to pivoting to Stroman. But they didn't have to have him. They have to have Soto. Everything you've heard Cashman say that he can say is how bad he wants to retain him. And it hurt them to trade Michael King. It hurt them to trade Drew Thorpe, who's now with the White Sox in the C's trade. It hurt them to trade four starting pitching options that could have really helped this year's team. But they did it for a generational talent on a walk year because that's how confident they are that they can sell him on the Yankees. And maybe the Mets are going to offer him $800 million for 12 years. If he loves being a Yankee, you think he's going to go to the Mets? I'm sorry. I know the Mets have more money. I know the Mets can do all this. They are the little brother in town. Always have been, always will be. And that's why when people say, oh, those Cashman said the Yankees are all in, how are they not signing Snell? How are they not signing Montgomery? How are they not trading for Cease? All in just doesn't mean make stupid, ill-advised, irrational, to use your word, decisions, Tom. They might go all in July. They know how much they have to keep Soto.
No doubt about it, man. As long as they hold on to some of the blue chippers, I'm ready for the ride. I'm gonna put my confidence in Cashman right now. It's probably a big time mistake, but I have to do it.
They've had a really good offseason. You got the,
no doubt,
arguably a top three player in baseball. You also got a very durable, reliable starter in Stroman. I mean, they got Verdugo, who's a high average guy, and a walk year for him too. They didn't trade Torres. They are all in. They're just not going to be stupid about it. And a fan's idea of all in is just throw money at everybody that's available and have a payroll of $500 million. You are an irrational fan.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. You put it so well there. All right, ready to talk Curb real quick?
Oh my God, dude. This episode was nuts. Where do you even want to start?
I don't know, man. This season is killing me. It's so good. Like the episode before this wasn't one of my favorites, but I mean this one between the dream and then the him and Funkhauser taking care of the kid. Oh my God, it was it was unbelievable. The maid with the sex scene, it was and then he ties it in, of course, with the maid having the trauma dream or whatever you want to call it, the nightmare,
the
I guess.
Trauma dream, and then she changing the painting. Oh my God.
Oh, man. The painting was just a classic. It was everything I wanted. It was just a perfect, I don't know, what was it, like 42 minutes of television or whatever, however long they have it.
Okay, so what is the worst text chain you've ever been a part of, if you can talk about it?
I've been on some rough ones. For a brief period of time, I was on a random one that I left like three times and somebody kept adding me back. And the funniest part was this was a text chain that somebody that had the number before me was on, and they kept adding me to the point where the third fucking time, because they kept referencing me as like whoever this person was before. The third time that I got re-added, I was like, hey guys, like I left this thing twice for a reason. I don't know who your friend is, but they changed their number.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
That is a tough one. I mean, being involved in ancillary people's like family group chats or something like that. Like that, I don't want any part of.
I also got a steamy text that was supposed to go to, it was a girl's name, so I think it was a girl.
Ooh.
But it was a graphic text. No sexting, no pictures, but the words that were used hearken a romance novel.
God damn. That's some text chain.
No, that wasn't the text chain. That was just from a random that was referring to the same person, but ended up texting me, and I texted back, "Hey man, wrong number."
That's all you can do.
Made my day.
That's great. Yeah. That.
Anything for you?
I don't have one that really sticks out. Like I was part of one.
I mean, the family ones are rough, especially when you got those couple of idiots that have the androids.
I'm fortunate that I don't have, like, I don't have a very active family group chat. We usually all do our own phone calls and texts, so there's
classic.
Some, but it's really not bad. And I have a relatively small family, too, so it's not that bad. I would say I had a job, like one of my personal training jobs, like from like one of my first ones in Connecticut, we had a team where like we would all go out and like we were all friends, but slowly but surely like some left or went back to school or took jobs elsewhere. But we were all like still in this giant group text, and they had one guy that was just really nostalgic about it and would like 3-4 years later pop up, and nobody had the balls to be like, hey man, that was like a while ago. Like you should probably move on. And I never responded to it, because I also, when I updated all my settings, lost like several of their numbers because I just lost touch with them. So it would just be like, I would look at my phone, there'd be 24, 25.
Thank God you can mute them.
This is awful. I will tell you this, for my brother's bachelor party last year, that was rough because there was like 15 people and they would go off on tangents. And I look at my phone like 60 texts. What the fuck?
So yeah, I told my best man to try and keep me out of the chat. I was like, listen, I'll be at my own bachelor party, so don't worry about that. Just keep me out of that fucking thing.
Yeah, those can go
long. Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in that chat. I don't know how active it is. You might have left, though.
I'm not in it. I think they moved on when they knew I couldn't go.
Yeah.
I haven't been in it. But obviously Larry wanted no part of that. I did love Susie's reaction to hearing that they had Jeff do the dreamscape. I'm going to kill that fucking fat motherfucker. And then you see him on. They're both in the middle seat. Jeff is just miserable.
Yeah, she got him on the trip too. I think they do, I don't know how often, but I saw them, they do a podcast, Jeff and Susie, so I don't know if they were just happen to be on a podcast together or they actually do it with each other, but I watched a clip from it. It was pretty funny.
They do one together. They're recapping every Curb episode ever.
Oh man, that's amazing. We should do our own podcast where we recap all of our episodes.
Oh my god, we got some tough ones in the archives.
Yep, no, we do. But that's all right, we've grown.
But yeah, the Funkhauser with the violin, that was great. And the girl pretending to be a cat, because you know that's going on in schools right now. It's like, all right, she identifies as a cat. We can't say anything. Pulls the string out of Larry's sweatshirt.
I'm about to fall into the world of parenthood. I got a really good feeling, you know, within the next couple of years, not to make any announcements on the pod, but
I was just
going
to say,
that's kind of the way things are going in my life.
Wedding? What is going on?
That's kind of the way things are going in my life. And I am very scared to be a father.
Well, don't have one of those fake dreams.
Yeah. And I'm hoping I don't have a daughter that thinks she's a cat or a son for that matter. They can be whatever they want. Just not a cat. Okay. We have two cats.
Yeah, that's true. You don't want to start talking to her like you talk to Soy.
No, and you know, to be honest, I know I'm going to be a real supportive dad and stuff, but like, I might have to look at my 6-year-old kid and be like, listen, I got to draw a line somewhere. Like, you're not a cat.
Oh, listen, you want productive members of society, and the longer you delay that, the harder it's going to be.
That's such a good way to put it. That is such a good way to put it.
I'll give you advice. If you have any questions, just call me and I'll help you out.
Oh, well, thanks, man. I know you've got really a hell of a lot of experience as being a parent, so you'll be my first go-to.
I'm a very rational human being, and sometimes when you're dealing with a lot of emotions, it's hard to be as rational as you want.
Yeah, that's what children need, just a rational guy speaking. Well, it, you know, you fell, but you're not. Nothing's broken, so stop crying.
Yeah, and that's where Larry comes in.
Exactly. I mean, me and you are pretty much on the same page with that, and I'm really gonna have to work on that as a father. I'm way too black and white. I know that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you'll change a little bit, but hopefully you know where to draw your lines.
I hope so, man.
As a very supportive and loving father.
Yes. How many episodes we got left? Does it go to 12?
I think 12. I think we got 5 more.
Okay, good. We got a couple more of those, and then we got full swing.
We still gotta see what ends up happening in Atlanta. I mean, they haven't really broached that since the meeting.
There's
with the
a
lawyer.
Couple. There's a couple of things hanging in the ballots. Obviously, the Atlanta, and then you have the wacky girlfriend.
Yes,
that's not over with by any means. Is there a couple more cliffhangers there? I'm sure there is. I'm sure there's some more
I'm
subtle
sure there
ones.
Is. You know, I'm just thinking, like, yeah, when is the wacky alcoholic girlfriend coming back into Larry's life? And did he have her relapse because he faked an illness?
Is she back on the wagon? All that stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Are we gonna see the Disney girl too?
We might. I mean, maybe she's a high-ranking official.
Let me tell you, Vince Vaughn, I'm done with the diesel joke. That's been played out. Vince Vaughn was firing on all cylinders in this past episode.
He's so good in this role.
Well, I mean, Larry, the only difference between Vince Vaughn and Funkhauser is the name. I mean, he is playing Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, no, it's been great. He's been such a great complimentary addition to the later seasons as Funkhauser's cousin. And also, too, I know he's not as much of a fixture in terms of volumes of scenes, but Leon still every episode has something that just has a line that has me dying.
Yeah, and I think he tickles Larry's funny bone better than anybody else because you always catch Larry laughing when he's talking.
Oh yeah, because him and Lewis always had the ability to freelance and improv.
They had the sauce.
So, yeah, most of the time Larry has no idea what they're gonna say.
Yep, no doubt about it. It's been a hell of a season. I hope to see Richard a few more times, although it might just make me sad. But I've really been enjoying it. And we have Full Swing tomorrow.
That we do, buddy. That we do. We'll have Will back on for that. And then plenty of college hoops on the way. Lots of podcasts, man. How's your voice? How are you feeling?
Well, you've been doing more podcasts than me, so I should be asking you that.
I feel great. I feel energized. I feel invigorated. And we're on one hell of a run.
We are. Those are all good things. Let's just try and keep this run going. Maybe we can keep it going longer than Scotty.
Oh, man. I would. If we could go on a Scotty run, baby, we'll be just fine.
Boy, we like that. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow evening.
Take care, everybody.